All right, guys, welcome to the Last Set podcast where we talk about all things health and fighting. Now, Jack, we're going to play a little game called I Spy with my little eye. Fucking nothing because it's been poked out.
Yeah, Mr. Leon. I mean, that was the second time he eye poked him. The first time was in the first round, got a warning.
Again, Herb Dean gave him that warning, mate. Gloves like this, hands up,
palms out. They used to say, wasn't that long ago, he would actually say something different. He would say, curl your hands over, close your fists. They don't like it. And I think someone actually said, like, told them that that's not correct. They're using their fingers for distance and things like that. And they're also just relaxing. It's hard to, nobody goes around fighting with your hands clenched like that. But they're telling him, if you go, are you going to have your hands out for distance? That's fine. But have your fingers pointing up. That's not okay.
That's what a lot of Muay Thai fighters do to measure up as well.
Yeah.
They always like to open up their palms as well.
Well, it's exactly what Leon did. When the actual eye poke that actually did the damage was the second time. I believe it was in the second round. And
it wasn't pretty.
It was not pretty. When we saw the close-ups, it was pretty brutal, and you could see actually the blood was coming down. Now, later on that we're seeing it, it was not in the actual eye itself. It was underneath.
Yeah.
Here. But you can see that it was clearly cut.
Yeah.
There, and obviously been pushed in. So it's the base of his eye that's been eye poked, and he was just writhing in pain. So how Leon did it was, you know, he was in the southpaw stance.
Yeah.
And he was kind of finding a home for that straight cross. And what he was doing was he was trying to connect with that left body kick. So in order to connect with that left body kick, he was doing what everyone was doing and trying to judge distance with his limbs out there. And he wasn't in a full guard, right? But he was still keeping his arm stretched out. And he went, and then he kind of fainted with the left hand and didn't connect. However, while he had him concentrating on the left hand coming up, he hit to the body. And it connected with the body, obviously. But we knew straight away he'd been poked in the eye when Bilal just turned around and just fell down on the ground. And he was writhing in pain.
Well, it was completely unintentional. It was an accident. They called it off and it was a no contest. I feel like that's fair. Mm. I feel like they will run it back. However, I just think it was a little bit strange that the pokes happened a couple of times within the first round. Literally, one just happened in the first 20 seconds. Mm. And then Herb Dean gave him a warning. And then again, it happens again in the second round where it actually cost the fight. I feel like that was a little bit unfair. That maybe I thought that... Because then I feel like the UFC... strict on these eye pokes. Like, if you catch him once, do it. One warning. Mm. Second warning, point deduction. Because eye pokes are...
That's usually what they do, though. Yeah, same with groin strikes.
Because you're, like, losing your vision, pretty much. You can have blurred vision and all that, and then Bilal said he couldn't see out of his eye. What if they get permanent nerve damage? What if they get permanent eye damage?
They don't... typically, you don't get permanent eye damage from that. It's when some people were saying, oh, I hope he doesn't have a torn cornea or anything. Oh, sorry, not a torn retina. That doesn't happen in that. Torn retina is from... strikes. Yeah. Yeah. It's not from eye pokes. Eye pokes, you're just going to have corneal scratches. I've had corneal scratches.
Yeah.
They just take... The one thing that's bad about corneal scratches is blurred vision, can't see that well. You know, light especially.
Yeah.
They can't see light. You have to be in a dark room. As soon as that hits it, eye starts watering.
Yeah.
You can't see anything. You're already sweating as well. It'd be horrific to see. I mean, I was rewatching Daniel Cormier versus Stipe Miocic 3.
Yeah, that's on Free Fight now.
Yeah. I watched that again. And you could see at the end of that third round, Daniel got poked.
Yeah.
And in the start of the fourth round, he says, I can't see.
Yeah.
I can't see.
Yeah.
And you could just see that eyelid just went.
Yeah,
just drooping, and it was not able to see at all. So there's can be issue with eyelids, right? Because I know with Eddie Alvarez, when he had his debut in ONE Championship, when he got KO'd, he actually had a punch actually, like, split his eyelid down that way.
Oh yeah,
and had to get surgery for that, and that's pretty fucking nasty. Yeah. So you can have damage to eyelids, and they can droop down and things like that. But it's typically just a scratch cornea. Yeah. But that can be an issue too, because if bacteria grows in it, then you can lose your sight.
Yeah.
The whole point is, because hands can be grimy and shit like that. So not as bad as everyone made it out to be with when it came to he could lose his vision. But obviously, when it comes to fighting, he's certainly just as bad as everyone thought. Yeah,
because what if that gives him a disadvantage? You know what I mean? Like, we know that John Jones in the past has been quite famous for his eye pokes.
Yeah, Daniel and Stipe in their rematches as well, for sure. Yeah,
yeah, eye pokes and calf kicks. They do make a difference. Yeah.
Yeah, eye pokes, calf kicks, groin shots, back of the head ones. These are the things that the ref needs to be watching out for. And I was glad they brought in the ref quickly.
Yeah. What is it? Herb Dean was quick to stop that. You know, it was fair. Yeah. I felt a little bit upset for Bilal because he came onto this fight, you know, late notice. He was ready to go. It was a pretty back and forth fight. However, I do believe that it was in Leon's favor at the start because he got him with that head kick that wobbled him, and then he threw some bombs against the cage. And Leon's fast, man. He's got such a quick jab. His boxing is very, very slick.
It's very crisp. He doesn't quite... he's similar to Colby in that he doesn't really sit down too hard on his punches. He's obviously a muscular guy, but he doesn't have that kind of one... hit knockout power that we might see in Jorge Masvidal or something like that, or, you know, the damage that Kamaru Usman can create. But he's fast. That's something that you don't typically see hard-hitting power from him. He's only got maybe one knockout in the UFC. I think his other finish is a submission. So he usually goes to decision, but he overwhelms people with speed and volume, and he did really well. He was just finding a home for that straight cross as well. It was just kept connecting. That jab was so quick, but it would set up distance really well.
Yeah.
And I felt he was doing really well. Bilal was just tough. Always been tough. The two things with him is toughness and conditioning. He's always been incredibly conditioned. Yeah. And that's what looked like would be in his favor. Coming from a quick turnaround from his last fight about 2 weeks ago, then, you know, he's already in condition. Right, he just needs to maintain that level of conditioning in order to fight. With Leon, that left head kick just connected. Right, shin on shin, and you could see it actually produced a cut as well as on top of that. Leon actually started to see a little bit of red after that because he actually went after it. You could see he was wobbled. He was on shaky legs.
Yeah.
Went after him, tried to connected with a few shots, but he was patient. Didn't rush in, which was funny because a lot of people were expecting, you know, a bit of ring rust. You know, almost it was just over 600 days out of the octagon. Yeah. We were expecting. Yeah. He didn't say that ring rust was going to be a factor. He said he doesn't believe in ring rust. However, you can say that, and it can still be an issue with, you know, with timing and things like that. But he did incredibly well. The interesting thing to me though is. He was apologetic, but he did say, regardless, you know, I was obviously winning the fight until then.
Yeah.
However, it's only one round out of five that took place. Never really got to see Bilal's conditioning get going. And he wasn't so interested in the rematch. He was more interested in having the title shot. And I understand. I understand him wanting the title shot, right? Because he's on an 8-5 win streak. Or 9 fights altogether. Now that this is a no contest, but it's a weird. He was interested in the rematch in the future. He said down the line, but he didn't say straight away.
You can't really say you deserve a title shot when you've been 600 days out of the photo of the picture and
it's
come
too
back
long. It's
win
too long.
And you haven't. You don't actually win. I mean, look, that's just that was just released.
Yeah, I saw that. So you can see the cut is underneath at the very bottom of his lower eyelid.
It's not pretty. And where is Leon Edwards in the rankings right now? Sixth?
Third.
I mean, yeah, even though, okay, third rankings, that's fine. But it's just, I don't think it's what you'd really, I mean, if you've been out of for that long, I feel like you need to either fight Hamzat like you were supposed to.
Well, let's say Leon did head kick him.
Okay.
And actually, let's say it was a similar performance to when Connor head kicked Cerrone, made him incredibly wobbly, swarmed on him, was very impatient, opposed to patient Leon, and got the KO in the first round. if he starched him in the first round with a stunning left head kick, do you think he could have jumped ahead of Gilbert, Jorge, Colby?
Yeah, if he won it in the first round.
But he didn't.
He didn't.
He didn't win the fight at all. Neither man won. So I don't understand him angling for a title shot. I understand he's very frustrated.
Yeah.
He's had cancellations. Obviously, only one of those cancellations was his fault. He needs to fight again. And it needs to be Colby, Gilbert, or Jorge. And I think if he got a no contest, try and angle a fight quickly. You've had your name in public, right?
Mm.
Angle it. Get on MMA Junkie or whatever. Get on whatever interview or podcast, right? And say, I want either Colby, Gilbert, or Jorge. Give me one of them.
Jorge sounds like the best logical answer because
if you steal someone's type, then you can actually angle for it.
Because
you know?
Kamaru is like, oh, bring me Masvidal and all that because he wants Masvidal, but Leon wants Kamaru. So that way it makes more sense because then you get two guys who want to set up, one person who wants another shot of the title, one who believes that he deserves a shot of the title, and they both believe they can take on Kamaru. Let them battle it out, considering that Masvidal has already lost to Kamaru and Leon Edwards hasn't had a shot, but he's been active for 2 days. So each need a stronger debate or a stronger argument to why they believe they should fight for the title soon. I think that's the most logical answer.
The most logical one to me is Colby.
Yeah.
Because Colby hasn't got a fight booked. They're already making it seem like Kamaru is going to fight Jorge, even though Jorge's last fight was a loss to Kamaru. But if Jorge's got a lot of hype and didn't have the whole training camp fine, then they can angle that to be the storyline for the fight, right? Gilbert just lost, right? I would love to see Gilbert as well, but he just lost. He just got knocked out. He should probably wait a bit longer than that. Colby, his last, out of those three people, his last fight is a win over Tyron Woodley, right? He stayed active. I think Colby versus Leon is an excellent, excellent fight. Just because Leon, very soft-spoken guy, but Colby can sell that fight as well. He's incredibly brash. He talks a big game. And to be honest, that would be an incredible fight because both of them have similar styles. They can both wrestle. Obviously, Colby's wrestling background is obviously a higher pedigree since wrestling isn't that popular in the UK. It's typically striking. But they both have similar styles when it comes to fighting and striking because they don't, they usually are hitting with you about 70%, probably about 70-80% of their max. And they can go. They both got incredible cardio.
Mm-hmm.
They don't tire. That would be an incredible fight. Yeah. I think Colby versus Leon Edwards is the next fight to make. If they cannot get the rematch straight away booked, because a cut like that probably could reopen pretty quickly.
Yeah.
If it was a simple eye poke like... the one that comes to mind is... Yair Rodriguez versus Jeremy Stephens, right? Mm. Didn't go that way. He got booed in his own country, and it didn't go. It wasn't going to go his way that night, right? They book it the week. I think it was a week or a week, 2 weeks afterwards. He beats Stephen, and then goes on the rest of his career. Well, hasn't gone that far. He's actually got issues with USADA, but that's what came to mind, that an eye poke stopped the fight, became a DQ, but then they booked it right afterwards. But there was no real damage to Jeremy Stephens' eye. He just could not see properly. There is damage to Bilal's eye.
Yeah.
What can we do with a rematch with Bilal when he's got to recover, and a cut like that can probably reopen and be an issue during the fight again? It's an issue. I just hope that Bilal gets the respect of taking a number three fighter and is given a much higher ranked opponent somewhere in the top 10 for his next fight. I think
Well, he'd worked hard to get there. So, I mean, I'll put some respect on his name for him, you know?
Yeah.
I'll definitely do that. I mean, I just wanted to heal up.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
Since that's his nickname.
Yeah, I remember the name.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, but the debate is, we wanted to bring up in this podcast. Is it time that UFC changed their gloves?
The funny thing about that is Trevor Whitman has his own set of gloves through Onyx, right?
Yep.
However, he's talked to the UFC and they're incredibly interested, right? And the only issue is they do not want to purchase the gloves through Onyx unless they own them.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a very strange situation. Now, the point on these gloves is, if I'm not mistaken, is that there's actually a curvature to it so that instead of having fingers up, they curl over.
Okay. So just let me read out the quote for you. This allows your hands to stay in a natural fist-locked position curved right away. If you see the strapping system in there so that you don't get that boxing break in your hands, it keeps everything, all the muscles, ligaments, and bones in place. So in that way, when you're punching, everything is in form. That was a quote from Rashard Evans, who heavily endorses the gloves, because I believe he was the one who first introduced them to Joe. And then Joe had Trevor on the podcast with Justin Gaethje. So I believe here's another quote. We are using lever in the hand compartments, but when it's your wrist and palm, when everything is sweating, we're using different material. You don't need those hand wraps. You do not get those sliding knuckles. Because often we actually see a lot of fighters having to quickly adjust their gloves.
Yes, because the wraps can, they do have really good hand wrappers and things like that beforehand, but when you get incredibly sweaty, especially when you're grappling and stuff like that, it can make the padding on the knuckles actually slide a little bit.
Yeah.
It's interesting that he's actually approached the UFC and the UFC are incredibly interested. However, Dana and the UFC are only particularly interested if they own the product.
Yeah.
They want to purchase the product. To be honest, Trevor Whitman has made something and he's put a lot of time into it and he owns the intellectual property for that.
Yeah. So
if he does not do what they could do, right? Trevor could either stand his ground.
Yeah.
And the UFC finds an alternative or continues out of ignorance is bliss and they don't really care.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have to, they still got people to watch and they didn't have to pay someone a win bonus because neither of them won. Mm-hmm. But the other option is that Trevor Whitman could kind of change his mind, although it is his intellectual property and he's probably got patents and things like that and he's paid for all this stuff. He can sell it to the UFC but have royalties for, each, certain amount that is purchased by the UFC, right?
And you can strike some form of deal. Like, they allow them to buy the property off him, but it's still under his name or something like that?
He'll always be known as... He would always be known as the creator. However, if he's signing over his intellectual property and his idea for how the gloves are produced and how that they've got you in that curled position without actually, using your muscles to squeeze and it protects you from doing eye pokes, is incredibly beneficial for the UFC. So they can afford to pay someone like Trevor royalties each time, especially when they're so tight-knit together anyway, since Trevor already does audio recordings during fights and has his own tips during fights taking place on UFC cards anyway. I would see it incredibly beneficial in buying Trevor Whitman's product, which is what they're interested in anyway, but making it mutually beneficial for Trevor Whitman through a more lucrative deal and through royalties and things like that. And still maybe possibly homage to Trevor Whitman's, because that's incredibly good. Imagine if they could purchase these gloves and then say, the UFC is different because we also look out after our fighters, not just by medical costs, not by how much we pay them, not by the prestige of they have, but it's also by the equipment we give them.
It gives them a better name.
It gives them an incredibly better name. Before they start, they can already do adverts for, and you can purchase these UFC gloves produced by head coach Trevor Whitman at Elevation Elevation MMA. And you can purchase these for $59.95. They could do that,
yeah,
right? And everyone would change from those normal 4-ounce gloves and go for those ones.
Yeah.
So I could, if they're moving over to, you know, Venom now, I'm sure they could.
It's gonna be also
they could also have a work out a deal for Trevor to slide in there too.
Yeah. Does Trevor own Onyx Sports?
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Just double checking. Anyway, so let's get back to the fights. The fight that stood out was to me on the card was the co-main event, which was between Mishka. I'm gonna need some help saying his name.
Kurkanov.
Kurkov.
Mishka Kurkanov versus Ryan Spann.
Sounds like coconut.
Coconut, yeah. Well, Ryan Spann knocked him out in a very short period of time. That 1 minute and 11 seconds.
I thought Mishka was going to win this one. He's fucking big for a 36.
He's quite large.
He's stacked for a 36-year-old. Yeah. 34. And he came off right off. There was no time to settle in that fight. Right off the bat line, Mishka came out with a jab, right hook, and a head kick from the southpaw stance. Mm. And then they were just swinging. Then we had a cup kick from Spann. Mm. And then after that, Spann sort of got a bit of breath. There was exchanging back and forth. Then Ryan just fucking knocked him down out of nowhere. And then he just started hammer fisting on him. Now, in terms of the rankings, they're not too far apart.
No.
But this is it's one of those fights that you have to look at afterwards where once they do it, okay, next fight has got to be for the top 10, in the top 10 position, you get what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so like one of those standout long counts.
Well, he shortly said after in his post-fight interview, he wants to move into the top 10 rankings now. Prior to them fighting, Mishka was actually at 11. However, earlier he was actually at 10.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the rankings are very fluid. They can move around because other people are fighting at different times. However, Spann said, look, when I was supposed to fight him, he was number 10. I want to be number 10 now that I've knocked him out in this fashion. And I can completely agree. Well, his last fight, he snapped his one fight losing streak, which was against Johnny Walker. Mm-hmm. He actually was looking impressive in the first round against Johnny Walker. But, you know, he was starting to actually, you know, travel down to the ground. And he actually said, look, that wasn't the right decision. And he was actually being a little bit more patient when he was striking with Mishka. He certainly got dynamite in his hands and he did incredibly well. Incredibly well.
Yeah, to come off of a loss to Johnny Walker like that, I mean, it's definitely some time back into the game. One person who I recommend would be nice to fight him to fight next could be, let's say, Nikita Krylov, because he had a really good fight a couple of weeks back.
Yeah, a couple of weeks back he fought. Yeah.
Or maybe you give him a rematch with Johnny Walker.
Possibly. Johnny Walker's currently got a torn pec at the moment, so it can be a difficult issue.
He can't really fool him.
Probably not. No, it's still an issue. That's why he pulled out of his fight against Jimmy Crute.
Yeah.
Also, actually, just speaking of Jimmy Crute, and I know this is a quick aside, but Jimmy Crute actually...
he's fighting Anthony Smith.
Yes.
Yeah, he's fighting Anthony Smith at the end of this month, I believe. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I was told. Yeah, go on, sorry.
Did you know that he has been living in a van for quite some time? So in the last few months, he's bought a house. So he's now moved out of his little van that he's been living in, which he parks behind his Melbourne gym. And he's now actually moved in a house thanks to acquiring some more 50K win bonuses. Now, he's just came off a win against Modestus Bukauskas, who I actually had a chat with probably just over a month ago, because he's going to be fighting at UFC 260. Brilliant guy.
Yeah.
You should check out that interview. But I'm impressed with Jimmy Crute, because now he's actually, he's moved out of his van.
Yeah.
He's got a house now, which is incredible to hear from a fellow Australian fighter.
Yes.
And now he's going to be fighting, instead of Johnny Walker, he's now going to be fighting Anthony Smith. Yes. The reason why I bring up Jimmy Crute is Ryan Spann actually said, look, he wasn't so much interested in Johnny Walker. In his post-fight interview, he also said, look, I want to be in the top 10, but I also want to fight the winner of Anthony Smith and Jimmy Crute. And I completely agree. That's who he wants to see. So if he really gets his way, he could be fighting against Anthony Smith, who's number 6, and Jimmy Crute, number 12. So that, there's a huge disparity between that. So interesting to see what could happen next. I've also heard thoughts of maybe Volkan Ozdemir being a possible... I know Dean Thomas mentioned that Volkan Ozdemir would be a good matchup for Ryan Spann at number 8. So if he quickly moves into the number 11 spot or the number 10, since Johnny Walker, he did lose to Johnny Walker. However, he could be set at number 11 still. He will need to fight someone in the between 5 to 10. And I think the winner of Anthony Smith and Jimmy Crute or Volkan Ozdemir, that would be incredible. Or Nikita Krylov, because Krylov is coming off a loss a couple of weeks ago, was it not? I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
So that's incredible from Ryan Spann. I can't wait to see him. Another, he did incredible in the first round. I can't wait for him to fight someone in the top 10 now.
Yeah.
Incredible.
I mean, it's just... I was just going to say, it's just a matter of paying attention to these fight nights now. Like, when it comes to these fight nights, they like to pick a lot of fighters that are sort of outside of the top 10. You know, give them
to build up their name.
Yeah, give up their names. Yeah. That's what I appreciate
especially
the most.
Especially when ESPN Plus has got free UFC fight nights.
That's what I was noticing.
They're able to get a little bit more watched eyes on them.
Yeah.
Typically, it's nice being in that bottom bit rather than the middle, because you could be at the very top. Like, you could be on a Conor McGregor undercard. Tons of people have paid, obviously. Yeah. They're going to watch you.
Yeah.
Or you can be at a UFC fight night, which is a free fight through UFC ESPN. You can watch the main card, the prelims, the early prelims.
Yeah.
It's really good. The bit in the middle, which are those kind of UFC cards that are like, they're okay, but they're not stacked. Yeah. Have a lot of hype behind them. It's difficult to get a lot of name value there. So being at the very bottom of the UFC fight nights, it's brilliant for you to move in the top 10, and a lot of people are watching and going, hey, I remember that guy from the
because now that once when you've accumulated and you've watched all these fight cards, now when you go and watch a fight night, if you go and watch an actual fight and big UFC event, and you understand who the people are and what their background is and who they've won to get to that position, rather than just some casual who just wants to go in there and watch the fight, you know, just watch the main event. By the way, there's something else I wanted to bring up. Did you know that just this last week, we probably had the greatest, if we can argue, the greatest card so far this year. I reckon it'll be the best card for quite some time now.
I think it was. It was incredible.
Yeah. Only got 800,000 pay-per-views compared to Conor McGregor fighting Donald Cerrone. Made over 1.4 million.
Then his fight against Dustin Poirier did 1.6.
1.6. That just shows... because some of the fights on the Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor card were not that great.
It was not bad card, not right? Bad. It was not bad card, but when we think of UFC 259, stacked from main prelims, card to prelims,
yeah.
Even, you know, like, even early prelims as well were good as well. Still had, you know, Carlos Alberto versus Kenny
We enjoyed the hell out of last week's card.
I enjoyed it very much, and it wasn't just stacked.
Yeah,
volume of fights,
but it kind of shows how I know it's a. But in terms of pay per views, it just shows how much the UFC needs Conor to make money, and I do believe that Conor is still the main cash cow of UFC, and I feel like he will be. But however, now that he's lost, depending on who he fights next, if he loses again, I feel like he might no longer be that cash cow anymore.
I think he will always be that cash cow.
You reckon?
I think people are writing him off behind him. I think the Irish people will always be behind him. Yeah. And he has such incredible name value that most people will switch on that and have a look.
Yeah.
Of course they will. If they hear Conor McGregor's fighting, they'll go and watch it. The issue is not with getting the hardcore fans interested. It's about getting the casual fans interested, because the casual fans take up 70%.
Yeah.
Right?
Fucking casuals.
Yeah, but the thing is with the hardcore fans, you don't need to sell Israel Adesanya versus Jan Błachowicz with them, right? Right, but a lot of them might be come around the Conor McGregor era and then be like, who's Dominic Cruz? Like,
yeah.
And who's the guy he's fighting? Casey Kenney? Never heard of him, right? It's, you know, it's difficult to sell fights to the casuals when there's no longer like hype or a big story or some type of trash talk that's going by. But the I agree with you. UFC 259 should have done way more pay per view fights. It was disrespectful.
I mean, at least a million. If they broke at least a million, I would have been happy.
I think a million would have been
1.1
would have been good. It was just, I don't know, I don't get it. I really don't understand it, to be honest. The only thing to me that's interesting is that if you're in the UK and you're signed up to BT Sports, you're able to watch every UFC card for free, right?
Mm-hmm.
In these like Muslim countries, you're able to watch all the UFC cards for free. Now, it's understandable now that like how good is Conor and Habib, how amazing are their names for the UFC when a lot of their viewers are actually, you know, coming from their nations or similar nations around them, and they are paying a lot lower costs to watch, right? Or not even paying to watch it in the first place. It just goes to show that like, it's incredibly valuable these big named fighters are for the UFC. I was expecting Adesanya versus Błachowicz to be at least 1 million buys, but it's weird. It's so weird. I don't get it, to be honest, but that's the thing with it. The MMA community can be very hot and cold with some fights, to be honest.
Yeah. One second I love you, 1 second I hate you.
Oh, exactly.
Anyway, you know what Dana White needs to do? He needs to give Danny again another check because his wife's 46 weeks pregnant. And then he just put fucking Gavin Tucker to sleep. That knockout was so clean. A right hand from the southpaw stance as well. It was in 22 seconds and he just walked off. And then he said, hey man, write me another check because my wife's pregnant.
Well, Danny Gay's old nickname was 50K.
Yeah.
For 50K bonus business. Yeah. Now Dan Dynamite Ige.
Yeah.
So, and he actually did get the 50K bonus.
Good.
Which was good. Danny Ige, incredible work. Took a short amount of work, to be honest, against Gavin Tucker. 22 seconds in the first round.
Yeah.
Incredible work. He just caught him so quickly, right? Yeah. And he just said, look, in his post-fight interview, he also went, look, I have the power to take these guys out.
Yeah,
I really do. You've got to watch out for someone like Dan Ige.
Yeah, he's solidified himself within the top 10 featherweight rankings for sure. I think he's number 9 in the featherweight rankings. Gavin Tucker was ranked pretty far down. I don't think he was in the top 15 either. He was pretty low in terms of
Gavin Tucker is not ranked.
Yeah.
And he said, give me a ranked opponent and needs to be in the top 10. Yeah. I'll give you in the top 5. He wants to be again. He called out Zombie. He says, I've been trying to fight Zombie for ages.
Okay.
I think he needs to fight either Zombie or he needs to fight Zabit. Zabit has got no fights lined up. Can't sort out the Rodriguez one because he's still suspended due to the issues with the USADA app and not adhering to it. We've already got Volkanovski versus Brian Ortega very soon at UFC 260 in 2 weeks' time.
Mm-hmm.
Max Holloway is not probably going to take any fights after kind of destroying Calvin Kattar very handedly across 5 rounds. Yeah. And he's only going to take a rematch with Alexander Volkanovski or fighting Brian Ortega if he does win for the first defense.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be either Zombie like he asked, or I'm sure he won't be bothered with getting a guy 2 ranks above Zabit Magomed Sharipov.
It has to be.
Honestly, we saw Korean Zombie fight, right? We saw him fight Brian Ortega, and then Brian Ortega set himself up for a rematch. We haven't seen so much coming from Korean Zombie in terms of social media and who he wants to fight. Zabit, he wants a fight. He needs a fight. And we've been told that he was supposed to fight possibly in January. Mm-hmm. It's March now. And he was supposed to fight in the first 3 months. It's going to be coming to the end of March when it comes to UFC 260, right? We need Zabit to fight someone. We need to keep him sharp. He needs to have his timing. He needs to be active. I want Dan Ige versus Zabit Magomedsharipov. That is the fight to make, and it has to happen. I'm so high on Zabit, right? He needs to fight someone to stay. I would say that a lot of mainstream fans probably don't know who Zabit is, I could 100% see him be the UFC champion for the featherweight division, right? 100%, and I would wish that he could fight Max Holloway or someone higher ranked. However, that's probably not going to happen with someone like Holloway when he wants to fight a rematch against Volkanovski or Brian Ortega, right? A rematch with either gentleman would be incredible. Mm-hmm. So Zabit needs to fight. He needs to fight either Korean Zombie or he needs to fight Dan Ige, and I think Dan Ige has showed himself really well by having a 22-second knockout in the first round. He has a little bit more hype around him. He should fight Zabit Magomedsharipov. That's incredible dynamic, you know. Both explosive fighters. Dan Ige is trying to climb the ranks again, and he wants to have a big name. Who better than Zabit? Zabit's always had questions about his conditioning. Let them fight in a 5-round main event instead of a 3-fight main event.
Let it headline a fight night.
Or be on the undercard of a main event.
Yeah.
Let it happen. And you will have a little bit more clarity on who can come after either Max Holloway or, you know, these other fighters that are going to attack the featherweight championship belt. But Dan Ige did incredible. Incredible. I don't actually know how many strikes actually were thrown.
Not many. I think the Michael Bisping said, only 3 leg kicks were thrown and then it was the right hand.
Yeah, Tucker only connected with one. He threw one shot, connected one strike. And Dan Ige threw 4 strikes and he connected with one.
Yeah.
So that only one shot was that one hit acquitter, not Gavin Tucker on his ass. And it wasn't just, he was just laid out.
Yeah.
There was no need for any, you know, follow up. For the ref to call it off, the ref, he just jumped in, it was done.
Yeah.
Dan Ige's power is something that could be, is something to be noticed for sure.
And then now Dan Ige is probably on his way back home soon. He can see the wife and go, here you go, babe.
50K. Yeah, 50K check.
They didn't call me 50K for nothing. Here
exactly,
you go.
Exactly.
Here's a go. Our baby's going to come out on a gold platter. anyway, well done, Dad. Anyway, I want to talk about this fight, next fight now, because this was my favorite fight to watch.
Say that was probably my favorite as well,
to be honest. So, do you know anything about this Davy Grant? Because I just really, I haven't heard about him beforehand.
He hasn't been able to fight for quite some time.
Yeah.
He actually doesn't require the need to fight, actually. He's actually got a restaurant.
Yeah, that's right. He said that.
A restaurant in England, but he just loves to fight, right? He's been having a lot of issues with injuries, which is why you probably haven't heard of him. He's had to cancel because he's had a few injuries. I'm not too sure about his specific injuries itself. However, he's hopefully he can stay active. Now, Jonathan Martinez had a huge amount of hype around him, to be honest. He's a little bit shorter than Davy Grant, and he actually he has a quite high output. However, as Davy Grant started to turn it up a little bit in the second round, he made sure that when Martinez started to increase his volume and his output a little bit, he would kind of stop that by intercepting and then putting on the pressure. Now, Martinez, he's incredibly quick, right? And he had some really powerful shots. I believe he dropped him in the first round, right? But Martinez doesn't do well when he starts getting backed up, or when he's thinking about striking and he's about to strike, Grant will intercept and put on the pressure and put him on the back foot before Martinez can take a breath and actually think about what he's about to do. He's too worried about what Grant is already throwing at him in the first place.
Grant, like, took the first knockdown really, really well. What he did was he actually tried to get he pulled him into his guard.
He's very good at jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, I'm sure he's got a black belt. But one thing that really, really impressed me was that Grant has a high variety of kicks. He has a very high variety of kicks. He was throwing a lot of back kicks and side kicks.
I was impressed. Yeah. It looked,
I wanted to ask you, has he got a taekwondo or karate background?
He doesn't have a taekwondo background, actually.
It's rare to see sidekicks these days, unless you're from a taekwondo or karate background, because you don't see many kickboxers or Muay Thai fighters throwing sidekicks.
No, they're not used. They're either used in karate or taekwondo. Yeah.
Because Grant did something really impressive at one point. He threw a roundhouse kick, and instead of dropping that leg down, he just went straight into a side kick. That's definitely
That's usually not a taekwondo move. That's usually a karate move. Yeah. Taekwondo doesn't really use it. Taekwondo will use they use it in a little bit more of a smarter way. Like the karate people will do it in terms of point. You did it more of a point fighting style, which is if you miss it with the roundhouse, you rechamber it, bring it back. Instead of bringing your foot on the ground and then picking it back up, you can lose a bit of time that way. So when you kick, you'll then rechamber it back, bring the knee in nice and close, pop it back out, hit them in the solar plexus. And you can't actually do a lot of damage. It's for point fighting. It's not really, it's also kind of for controlling range. You know, you pop that leg out, they're aware that kick can hit them. They're thinking too much about the kick. And then you're able to, instead of hitting to the solar plexus, you can hit them to the head.
Okay.
But in Taekwondo, you would use it as a skipping side kick in order to cover distance really quickly. He was using it more in a karate way, but his spinning hook kicks, that was in a karate Taekwondo way. And he was getting them off very quickly. Incredible cardio. I thought he did incredibly well. Yeah.
Oh, so I've got some information to bring up, man.
Yeah.
So David Grant, I can't believe I didn't recognize this, but he was on the Team America, the Ultimate Fighter, Ronda Rousey and Misha Tate
episode.
He made it to the final, but he didn't. He lost the final to Chris Holdsworth. We can bring him up in just a second. So David Grant, he made it to the final, but he couldn't. He got to the final because one of the guys could not make weight. I remember on that season, one guy could not make weight at all. Then when he made it to the final and fought Chris Holdsworth.
Sounds like Hemsworth.
Yeah, Holdsworth. What happened was Holdsworth won that fight. He won the whole division. And then he had never lost a fight. He had total six fights in total. Five by submission, one by decision. That was the only fight he had the only fight he had against David Grant that went to decision. So he was someone to put someone away. And then what happened was everyone was talking about him in the UFC, but they never saw him fight again after that. Now, the reason being was because he was a member of Team Alpha Male. And what happened was he was in 2010, that's when TJ Dillashaw was just starting to come up. So I remember when Chris Holdsworth talked about in an podcast.
Was he the one that TJ injured?
Yes, correct.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah. He was because he would talk about TJ's aggressive sparring.
He's known for being an asshole.
Yeah.
Sparring. And
that's right. And he was the one who he injured because he never really fought again after that. Was also absent from competitive fighting since 2014 while was taking an indefinite hiatus from condition due to post-concussion syndrome, which he talked about that he gained because he was expected to fight Kai Ho Kang, but he pulled out due to replaced by Chico Camus, which he won by via unanimous decision. So yeah, it was in that period. So he never fought again after that issue that he had at Team Alpha Male. So that's
Chris Holdsworth was known to he was supposed to be a very good fighter from Alpha Male, right?
Yeah,
he managed to submit David Grant by rear naked choke at the end of the Ultimate Fighter, right?
Yeah.
And then
he was able to win by submission. My bad. Rear naked
choke. Now, then we didn't really get to see anything about it, but the only time I did see any information about him was he was actually talking about TJ Dillashaw, and I think Cody Garbrandt actually mentioned it as well. He'd injured him in a training session, and I think it was his neck that he injured, and he was no longer, he was not fit to fight anymore. Now, David Grant, now he was in the UFC, and he hasn't been incredibly active. Now, he's now on a 3-fight win streak, that's with one fight per year, his last fight being Martin Day. I do remember that fight last year in July, winning by KO. I must say, by taking that time off, he looks better. he does look better.
Yeah.
And I think one thing I was very impressed by David Grant was not his power, because he was landing powerful strikes, but I would say Martinez had the more powerful kicks and the more powerful strikes. Martinez even kicked one of his legs out and just flushed easily.
Yeah.
Grant's striking was a little bit wild when it came to a lot of his big looping swinging hooks were a bit wild, but they had a lot of power. They did have a decent amount of speed and power behind. Mm-hmm. I was impressed by his conditioning and his kicks, because he was flying these kicks, and kicks are not often used in MMA in the high caliber, because if they're telegraphed a lot, then they're quite easily checked and you've just expended a huge amount of energy. So they're not often used. But I thought he used them very well.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do them in a defensive way. He used them in a lot of attacking motion. So I was impressed by David Grant. His KO was incredible against Martinez. And Martinez was the favorite. Grant was the underdog in this fight. He was not expected to win, even on a 3-fight win streak. So congrats to David Grant.
Well done, Grant. You can go back to your restaurant now. You can go.
He totally can. Now, I think he wants to climb up and get in the rankings now.
He's 35, David Grant. So, you know, he's got a fair bit of time left. I don't see why not give him someone higher, because the bantamweight division's now more stacked than ever. If he wants a nice paycheck, if he wants to get a nice fight in, give him some. I reckon he can just sort of get on the brink of the top 10.
Well, he's not in the even in the top 15 at this moment.
He's not in the top 15.
No, and is what would be interesting is number 15, Marlon Chito Vera. Now, Marlon Chito Vera, his last fight was Jose Aldo. However, this would be a rematch. Now, Vera fought Grant back in 2016.
Okay.
He beat Chito Vera. Okay. So that would be a really good fight as well. You could also even set that up with Kyla Phillips. Kyla Phillips just won last weekend against Yisong Dong. Song Yadong. So a lot of people in the bantamweight division are a bit tangled up right now, to be honest.
Yeah.
Cody Sabin versus Mirab Dvalishvili. Sorry, I can't say his name right. Dvalishvili. That's going to be set up. That's already set up now, but it's going to be in the coming months. So a lot of those bottom top 15 are actually a bit tied up right now. So the only people I see David Grant actually positioning to get in the rankings is Kyla Phillips or Marlon Chito Vera, I think so.
Yeah.
Chito Vera would work so well, being a rematch, being 5 years ago. That we'll see if that time taken off by Grant is actually, you know, being incredibly beneficial for him post, you know, concussion trauma.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to see that fight.
Yeah.
I want to bring up, I didn't tell you this at the start of the podcast, but it'll be funny to tell you now. So Eric Anders, he was winning against Darren Stewart in that first round. And Darren was doing well. You know, he was taking a lot of heavy shots. But he was obviously very large people for the middleweight division.
Oh, they're very huge. Because Derek Anders, didn't he used to fight light heavyweight as well?
I believe so. And Eric Anders is quite a large middleweight as well. I always see him doing strength and conditioning work and things like that. Very explosive strength and conditioning work, and you could see it landing bombs on Darren, who just put a pace on Stewart. We kept going, and I believe if it kept going for the rest of that round, I believe Stewart would have been knocked out. But Anders was getting a little bit too, he was setting up some knees well with some of the strikes, right? If he was missing with his cross, he'd be coming quickly with a knee, try and drop him. But when Stewart dropped, he continued with the knees, and there was one knee that actually missed his head, and then he was warned about the knee.
Yeah.
And then later on, he actually did connect with a knee. Now, it wasn't incredibly hard. It was not what we saw last week at UFC 259 with Aljamain Sterling versus Peter Yan, but it did connect. It was illegal, right? Once Stewart got up, they brought in the doctor right away. The doctor looked at him and said, look, you can barely stand. How are you supposed to fight? Called off the fight. It was considered a DQ. What was interesting was, we're friends with the Speakeasy podcast, another MMA podcast. And he spoke to Eric Anders prior to this fight, and they spoke about the Peter Yan illegal knee. And he said, oh, how fucking stupid could he have been to, you know, land that that illegal
the irony.
And the irony is, you know, less than a week later, he did it himself and got DQ'd in the first round. So, you know, he's made an error. He released a statement. He said, "Look, I've made an error. I did something in the heat of the moment." I do understand it was a light knee. It wasn't exactly we can't put it in the same category as the Peter Yan knee, because that was fucking horrifically intentional.
It's funny that you brought that up as well, because Aljamain Sterling put out a tweet about it years ago.
There's been clarification with that. That was to do with UFC 252, I believe, and that was Anthony Smith versus John Jones.
Okay.
That was when Anthony Smith really could have taken the cop out, and he would have been given the light heavyweight belt when he was illegally kneed by John Jones, mm-hmm. right? When John Jones hit him in the head. But Anthony Smith got up, was a soldier, soldiered on, but eventually lost across the five-fight war. Now, he was commenting on that in a Twitter post saying, "Oh, look, just do illegal shit and just don't hope to get caught." He's joking. He's talking about, he clarified that as well. He's joking. He's talking about how John Jones is hoping just to do illegal shit and hoping no one notices. Mm-hmm. That's what he was saying. Mm-hmm. He was actually talking to how you shouldn't do illegal knees. Again, irony. At UFC 259, quite a few UFCs later, he gets battered by a brutally intentional knee.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, though. Like, knee aside, Eric Anders was winning that. He was smashing Darren. He was smashing Darren. I would have seen him up against the cage. Even Bisping was like, "Darren, get your hands up."
I would have seen him win against Stewart. I would have seen, in that first round, he was destroying him, and I think there was still plenty of time left for him to get the finish. If it didn't happen, most likely in that second round, he would have. Now, again, it's an MMA fight. Small 4-ounce gloves. Anything can happen. Mm-hmm. Stewart could land some crazy hit, and Anders could go down. It's just sad that we get robbed of that. Yeah. Hopefully, a rematch of that does occur in the future.
Yes.
The likelihood of that happening, maybe not going to happen, since Stewart took a lot of punishment in that first round, and I think most people would say Anders probably would have won that fight if it did progress further on.
I reckon if he just kept pounding him, the ref would have just waved it off. I feel like he just got too excited. I think he said that as well.
He did the moment. He did the moment decision. Irony in that he spoke to the Speakeasy podcast, said how silly it was to do an illegal knee, but obviously he must understand now it was in the heat of the moment. I still wouldn't see then his knee being in the same category as the fucking brutal intentional knee by Peter Yan, where he wasn't so much hitting at the moment, looked, went, bang, hit him in the knee. Derek Lewis. So he wants to stay active now. Oh, true.